Please, folks, may I have your attention, please? Attention, please. I can deal with the troubled friends with a wave of my hand, this very hand. Please observe me if you will. I'm Professor Harold Hill, and I'm here to organize a River City Boys band. Oh, think, my friends, how can any pool table ever hope to compete with a gold trombone? Ra, 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 da, 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 ra, ra. Remember, my friends, what a handful of trumpet players did to the famous, fabled walls of Jericho. Oh, billiard parlor walls come a-tumbling down. Oh, a band will do it, my friends. Oh, yes, I said a boys' band. Do you hear me? I said River City got to have a boys' band, and I mean she needs it today. Well, Professor Harold Hill's on hand. River City's going to have her boys' band. As sure as the Lord made little green apples, and that band's going to be in uniform. Johnny, Willie, Teddy, Fred. And you'll see the glitter of crashing cymbals. And you'll hear the thunder of rolling drums and the shimmer of trumpets. Tantara! And you'll feel something akin to the electric thrill I once enjoyed when Gilmore, Liberati, Pat Conway, the great creator, W.C. Handy, and John Philip Sousa all came to town on the very same historic day. 76 trombones led the big parade with 110 cornets close at hand. They were followed by rows and rows of the finest virtuosos, the cream of every famous band. 76 trombones caught the morning sun with 110 cornets right behind. There were more than 1,000 reeds springing up like weeds. There were horns of every shape and kind. There were copper bottom timpani.
You know, when John Philip Sousa wrote the Washington Post March in 1889 for a ceremony announcing the winners of a student essay contest, he started a craze, an unbelievable craze. It was the age when the center of every town green was the bandstand. And when tobacco companies gave away newspaper editors' cards like baseball cards, Arthur Pryor, the Paganini of the trombone, penned the St. Louis Post Dispatch March. The noted trombonist Frederick Innes created marches for papers in Pittsburgh, Atlanta, New York, and Washington. One third of his entire musical output. Alessandro Liberati wrote the Kansas City Star March, which served as the daily sign-on music for the paper's radio station until 1958. The fad was not brief. As a matter of fact, the Louisiana Courier Journal got a march named after it in 1961. Altogether, more than 100 newspaper marches were written. That's an amazing number. A craze that started in 1889. And we've heard the song so many times, 76 trombones, and then everybody goes, blah, 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 blah. And you get to the part where he says, and Gilmore, and John Philip Sousa. Okay, I'll bite. Who are those other people? Well, let's talk about them today because they're an essential part of our history. They're people that everyone knows, but nobody knows. And it's an interesting look at history from where we are now to back where things were in a way that I don't think somebody else is going to bring to you today. Patrick Gilmore was known as the father of American bands. He's the first person listed by, quote, Professor Harold Hill from, what was it, the Gary Owen, right? Gary, Indiana, class of '05, I think it was. But Gilmore was born on Christmas Day back in 1829 in Ireland. He started his musical career when he was 15. He traveled through Canada with an English band. He was a cornet player. And you're going to see a trend here. Several of these guys were either trumpet or cornet players, which is kind of cool, considering I don't know the first thing about brass instruments. I'm a string guy. I played the violin for many, many years. I played piano, which is not necessarily a string instrument. it's a all of the above kind of an instrument, because the strings are strung on a brass harp. So it's got brass, it's got strings on the inside, and you hit the keys, so it's percussion. So it's kind of like a combo platter of instruments, I guess. I play the oboe, which was woodwind, and the English horn. So I'm kind of anything but brass. But all these guys, all band leaders, and that's a commonality that they're going to have here. They were talking about in this song, they were talking about all these famous band leaders. But let's jump back to Patrick Gilmore for a second. Moved to Massachusetts in 1848 and became the leader of the Suffolk Boston Brigade and the Salem Bands. He worked at a store of a guy named John P. Ordway. And we're going to come back to Ordway a little bit later on. But the important thing is that Ordway published music. He's big into music. He was a doctor, but he really loved music. The first promenade concert in America was a huge bash that occurred in 1855. And Gilmore coordinated, managed, and stood the whole thing up. That was his baby. The orchestra that he had was the forerunner of today's Boston Pops. He also set up Gilmore's Concert Garden, which later became Madison Square Garden in New York City. He literally was considered the music director of the nation. He led the festivities for the 1876 centennial celebrations in Philadelphia and the dedication of the Statue of Liberty in 1886. And in 1888, he started the tradition of seeing in New York City in Times Square, setting up in New York City in Times Square, and playing until midnight. They had the first big celebration because Gilmore had his band out there. And this was the age of the full band. As we get into the teens, the 20s, you get into the smaller stage bands, jazz bands, things like that. You can see the transition into swing and then into rock and roll, into, I'm not really sure what it is today. I'm not really sure if it's music either. In 1857, he performed at President James Buchanan's inauguration. Now, in case anybody is a little fuzzy on this, James Buchanan was the 15th president of these United States. In 1858, he founded the Gilmore Band. He enlisted in the 24th Massachusetts Volunteers and hung out with General Burnside. And General Burnside, we all know, of Fredericksburg fame, sent several thousands off to their death in Fredericksburg when he tried to take the city from the Confederate Army. Later in the war, he was made the bandmaster general and placed under General Nathaniel Banks. Guy was busy. The guy's amazing. And how much do we really know about him? The average citizen doesn't even know that Patrick Gilmore existed. You know, in 1869, he undertook the National Peace Jubilee, and then just 3 years later, he coordinated and kicked off the World Peace Jubilee. Major, major engagements that he set up for all kinds of people to come to. Matter of fact, it was some of the people were so famous. This was the only North American appearance of Johann Strauss II, who's known by many as the Waltz King. It was the only time he came to North America was to be with Patrick Gilmore. Huge coliseums were erected for the occasions of these two events. One held 60,000 people, and another one held over 120,000 people. Back in 1872, a stadium was built up in Boston that held 120,000 people. And we don't have stadiums that big today. You know, what does the Rose Bowl hold? Like 109,000, 111,000? I'm sure Christopher will look that up while I'm talking. But it didn't matter. You know, in 1873, he moved to New York City and became the bandmaster of the 22nd Regiment. The 22nd Regiment is my former regimental affiliation. They were the regulars, by God. And he wrote a song called The Famous 22nd Regiment. And we're going to hear that in just a little bit here. But there's other things that Patrick Gilmore is much more famous for. He was actually setting up the celebration in 1892 for the quadricentennial for Christopher Columbus's voyage to the New World. And he had a heart attack and he died. He's buried in Calvary Cemetery in Queens. I used to live up in this area by Maspeth, Queens, and he's buried just up in that area. But there's a couple other songs that he had written that you might know if you heard them. One is called John Brown's Body, and everybody's probably heard this song. It was taken a couple of years after he wrote it, and some new words were put into it by Julia Ward Howe. Now people know it as the Battle Hymn of the Republic, but the song was originally entitled John Brown's Body. The music remained the same, but the libretto was changed. And then another famous song that he had was called Good News from Home, which was such a huge success back during the Civil War, and the melody would be familiar to you if we played it today. But it was so successful that he wrote a sequel called Sad News from Home. And then he wrote God Save Our Nation. Again, another song that you would know the melody to if you heard it. But then probably most famous of all is the one that we hear even now. It gets played near the end of every war. It was big in World War I. The Gulf War, they played it a lot. And it was called When Johnny Comes Marching Home. Most people have no idea that these songs were written by probably one of the most famous bandmasters of his day. But let's go back for just one second to John Ordway. Now, John Ordway had a little music store, and he had sponsored some groups and printed sheet music, things like that. And he had a group that performed. They performed at Ordway Hall in Boston. So you know he was well-to-do. He was a doctor, a composer. He was also a politician. Go figure. He went to Harvard Medical College. He tended soldiers in Gettysburg as a surgeon. I mean, he's a busy guy. But one of the most important things that Ordway had done was in 1852, a person named James Lord Pierpont had a composition called The Returned Californian. It was written specifically for Ordway and the troop that he sponsored. It was called Ordway's Aeolians. I got that right. It was a black-faced minstrel troupe that would go around and perform. But the name of the song was called The Returned Californian. And a lot of songs at that time in that area were written for the Aeolians. But there was one specific one that was introduced and written for Ordway. And it was called Open Horse Sleigh. It was written in 1857. And it was considered to be much too racy to be sung in a church by a church choir. But we've come to know it today as Jingle Bells. So never discount the fact that there's this 6 degrees of separation between one or the other. So many things are linked together, folks. It's really quite amazing. So round up here with Patrick Gilmore, I promised you, we're going to play a little clip here from the famous 22nd, which was one of the biggest hits that he had had for a large band back in the 1860s. So here it is, the famous 22nd. Very famous back in the day, the famous 22nd Regiment March. And it sounded similar to, if you could tell, it sounds similar to a lot of the other marches. Of course, it has that marching beat to it, right?